This is the How to Not Suck at Money podcast, show number 8. Welcome back to the How to Not Suck at Money podcast. I am your host, Devon Jarvis. Glad to have you here with me. Hope everyone is doing great and you guys are doing well out there. Took some time off for a couple of weeks, if you've noticed, haven't really posted any episodes, but had a lot going on and some things to take care of. Had to spend some time with the family, and but I'm back and I'm ready to continue on and pick up right from where we left off. And one of the investment methods that is my personal favorite that I haven't really talked about so far on the show is real estate. And I want to get into why I think real estate is the best investment and why I focus all my time and energy into investing in real estate. So in this episode, I'm going to give you my top 10 reasons for why I think real estate is the best investment. Now, I could have kept going way past 10, but for the sake of time, I'm just trying to narrow it down and just highlight the 10 best things I think makes real estate the best investment that there is out there. But before I get into it, let's take a break for our show sponsor. All right, so to kick the show off, I think it goes without saying that everyone has their favorite way as far as how they invest, whether it be in stocks, mutual funds, ETFs, you know, different types of medium. What I'm going to talk about, like I said, is real estate and why it's my favorite. And getting into it, my first reason of why I think real estate is the best asset class to invest in is because of appreciation. Now, there's different types of appreciation. What I'm specifically going to speak about is the natural appreciation. So this type of appreciation occurs when you buy a place and that market will go up over time. So for example, if you bought a house that was $100,000 and that market appreciated about, you know, 3% per year, then the next year it's going to be worth $103,000. And then the year after that, it'll be increased by 3% of the $103,000, not of the $100,000. And that is the natural appreciation. The second part of the appreciation and the second thing I enjoy about real estate is the forced appreciation. Now, forced appreciation is actually pretty great. This is where you can go in, you can go to a neighborhood, find houses that are, you know, worth, and I'll stick with the $100,000 theme. If houses are worth $100,000, but this one house in that particular neighborhood is just completely crap, it needs like a new roof, you know, maybe some paint, whatever the case may be, then it's not going to sell for $100,000. It'll sell for less than that. So let's say maybe you buy that house for $70,000 and it needs, you know, $20,000 worth of work. Now you have a $10,000 buffer because the other houses in the neighborhood is worth $100,000. This is kind of like the Burr method, which is a term that's coined by one of the bigger pockets personalities named Brandon Turner. And that stands for buy, rehab, rent, refinance, repeat. So you're going to buy an under market value property that needs some work. And this may be paint, fixing up some new cabinets, new kitchen, things along that line to bring it up to the level of the other houses in the neighborhood. And then when you get the rehab done, then you can go ahead and rent it. And once you rent it, now you can go back to the bank and say, hey, you know, I fixed this property up. This is what it's worth. And then you can get a refinance. You can pull out the equity that you had in the house, which is usually your down payment, and then you can repeat that process. And I could talk more about the Burr process in a different episode. But that forced appreciation is fantastic because it allows you to buy under market value property and go ahead and get it up to code, up to the other level of the properties that are in the neighborhood. And then you can charge market rent and now your property is going to be worth a lot more than what it was when you initially bought it. And number 3 for why I think real estate is the best investment is the tax benefits. Now, I think this is probably the most overlooked benefit as far as real estate investing goes, which the average person doesn't really understand. So I'll probably spend just a little bit more time talking about this. There's multiple different ways you can get tax benefits when you're looking at real estate. So the first part is the depreciating the income. Now, this is just based on the IRS tax code, and this is just a paper depreciation. So if you had a property and you're getting, you know, your monthly rent, let's say that rent is $1,000 a month and it's being paid by your tenants, the IRS is going to say, all right, hey, you have this property, it's worth $100,000, you're getting $1,000 a month rent. But we know that owning property, you're going to have some, you know, expenses. You're going to have to pay for upkeep of the property. You're going to have to replace the roof. You're going to have to make sure that you're keeping the electrical, all these different things up to code. You're going to have to put some money into the property. So they have this thing called depreciation. Now, this is really done on paper. And what they do is you can take the value of the property, so that $100,000, and they'll say you can depreciate the value of the property over a span of 27 and a half years. So that really is just for the brick and mortar of the property. You can't depreciate land because they'll say, hey, land doesn't really depreciate in value. So if the value of the property with the land is $100,000 and they assess the land value, and I'm just going to use round numbers here, to be $20,000, and they're saying that the structure that sits on the land is going to be worth $80,000. So you get to depreciate that $80,000 over 27 and a half years. And you can use this to offset your income that you're going to get from your tenants that's staying in the property. So what does that mean? With a $80,000 structure on the land, if you depreciated that over 27 and a half years, it's saying that you can immediately write off $2,909 every single year. So if you're making $1,000 rent and you multiply that by 12, you're looking at $12,000, and then you subtract $2,909, it's saying that you only made, instead of $12,000, you made $9,091. All right, and this is just based on the depreciation alone. The other tax benefit that I think is great is you get to deduct your mortgage interest. So if you have mortgage interest of, you know, 3%, you get to write that off as well. And then you get a credit there from the IRS. And any type of repair, so another step that you can take to reduce how much you pay to the IRS is the cost of any repairs you do. So if getting that property ready costs you $10,000, you get to write that $10,000 of repairs off as well. So there's multiple different things you can do as far as getting some tax benefits. So number four for tax benefits, cost of services. So any cost that you use to manage your property. So for example, if you have a management company and they manage your property, you can deduct that on your taxes. If you have a LLC and your property is an LLC, you can deduct that as well, because the IRS is going to see that as a necessary business cost using the LLC to protect your assets. You can deduct that as well. And this is one of my favorite things that you can use on the tax side. And this is any cost of travel that's associated with the property. So for example, if you are an out-of-state investor and your property is in a different state and you need to go out there because you need to check up on it, you need to have a meeting with your property management team in that area, you can actually deduct your travel costs that you spend to go out and visit that property. So this is, I think, great, because you can, if you play it just right, you can, you know, line it up to where you can have a property in a desirable area and you can go out and maybe get a long weekend or something and, you know, have a good deduction on that. And then any type of utilities you have on there, you can deduct as well. So those are just some of the tax deductions. And obviously, reach out to your tax professional. And this is very subject to the state you live in and the current tax code and your specific situation. So reach out to your tax professional and they can go into more details with how you can deduct some of these things on your taxes. Number four on this list is passive income. So passive income, I think, is key. And it's not just passive income. This is passive income for life. So when you invest in this property, you're going to spend money, you put your initial down payment, and then your tenant is going to pay your mortgage. You're going to take out some money to cover expenses, your management, and, you know, potential vacancy loss in the event that someone moves out and your property is sitting there empty. But then everything after that is considered passive income. So you want to have this passive income because this is money that's going to come in that requires very little effort and energy from you. So this is great because instead of you having to actively work to earn that income, you can passively earn that income. So you're putting in most of the initial work up front, but then after that, you can reap the rewards and the benefits. So this passive income obviously is going to vary based on many different things. So if you have a mortgage on the property, then your passive income is going to be lower. If you have a free and clear property to where you have no mortgage, now you're just paying for, maybe you have a management company. If you don't have a management company, then that's not an expense that you have to account for. But now you're looking at just putting some reserves aside for those things that I mentioned before, which is going to be, you know, maintenance, CapEx, and vacancy, and everything else is going to be considered, you know, cash flow, and you can use that money to live off. So the other thing about this passive income that I really enjoy with rental property is the fact that over time, when there is inflation, you also get to raise your rents. So you can raise your rents to keep up with inflation. So it's not like, you know, if you're charging $1,000 for rent today, then that's the exact same amount you're going to charge for rent 5 years from now. Because historically, property values tend to go up. And with that, rents tend to go up as well. So that passive income, we can say for the most part, will be adjusted for inflation. Number five on this list will be the price range that you're looking for. And I will couple that with leverage as well. So real estate is great because there's many different price ranges you can look for depending on the neighborhood. You can look for the median home income and then you can charge, you know, rent based on that medium type of house. So if in a particular neighborhood, let's say Kansas City, which is one of the locations that I invest in, the average home size in, you know, the particular area that I invest in is roughly 1400 to 1600 square feet. So I know how much to charge based on, you know, the square footage and the areas in which I invest in, what I can reasonably expect for rent. Now you can go up to, you know, a lot larger style house and expect more rent based on that. However, how much is your mortgage going to be compared to what you're going to get in rent? So the price range in which you can operate is going to drastically fluctuate, and that's going to decide, that's going to be one of the deciding factors for how much you can make in real estate there. The leverage, I think, is going to be one of the biggest factors. Now, you can go out, if you're in a position, you can save up some money for a few years, and then you can go out, buy a property, and pay for it cash. And then just all the money you make pretty much is, you know, cash flow, passive income, and that's great. However, if you take out a mortgage or you use leverage, you can probably and most definitely actually invest in more properties in the same period of time. Now, each property will not give you as much cash flow as if you invested and paid for a property 100%. But now, instead of, you know, spending $100,000 on one property, maybe you can split that $100,000 up and put 20% down on four different properties. And now you can start to get all the different benefits as far as having multiple different tenants in these properties. And now you have four assets over just the one by using leverage. So leverage is really great. And as long as you know how to use it and you don't over leverage yourself, leverage can really be the fire to the engine that can really propel you forward a lot faster. And typically what you can expect with leverage is the banks will give you anywhere from 70 to 80% of the value of the property. So it means you're only putting anywhere from 20 to 30% down. And now you get to control that asset and you get to reap all the benefits of owning that asset, which the bank doesn't get to. So you get to, you know, reap the benefits of the appreciation, the principal pay down, you know, from your tenant living in there and all that type of stuff. So it's pretty much like you own the property. So that's why leverage is so powerful. And number six on this list is what I just talked about, that principal pay down. Now, principal pay down, what does that mean? It means you get that loan for $100,000, you put 20% down, which means you put $20,000 down, and then you get a tenant into your house. So the tenant has to pay rent. Once you get that rent money, which if you're doing this correctly, it means that your rent that you're getting paid will cover your mortgage and then some, because you were going to have additional expenses like your property management, taxes, insurance, all that type of stuff. So principal pay down means that your rent is going to cover your mortgage, but that is not being paid by you because it's being paid by your tenant. So while you will have increased money from some cash flow with whatever is left over, the tenant is also paying into the principal of your property, which means every single month that you have a tenant there, you're getting some cash flow, but then they're also paying down the principal, which means you're also building equity into the property. So that's really what principal pay down is. And when you use leverage and you have a tenant paying off your mortgage, principal pay down becomes really powerful and it adds to your net worth. And there's a reason why, you know, according to CNBC, 90% of all millionaires have real estate. And this is the reason why. And number seven is that the real estate can easily be transferred to your heirs. So what does that mean? You can pass this asset off to your kids and there's really no tax on the properties. So if you had taxes that you owed the IRS on these properties by, you know, maybe doing 1031 exchanges, and that's where you tell the IRS, hey, you know I owe taxes on this property when I sell it, but I'm just going to roll it over into another property. So I'll pay you later on the taxes that I owe you. When you actually die and you pass this asset over to your heirs, the IRS will say, oh, I know you owed us taxes, but well, I guess you're dead. So you can't really pay taxes if you're dead. So now your kids can pick up this asset and the tax is completely forgiven from that perspective. And now they can go on and start to manage the real estate. There's many, many other reasons to how you can get to pass your real estate asset to your heirs without paying taxes. So definitely consult a tax professional and they can explain that to you. Obviously, in this episode, I'm trying to just highlight some of the ways in which you can save money, but I'm also oversimplifying it as well. So be mindful of that. So definitely reach out to your tax professional. They can explain that to you a little bit better. Number eight is just the diversification that you can have in real estate. There's so many different types of real estate that, you know, you don't need to just invest in one. So, you know, for example, I like commercial real estate. I don't actually invest in it. I'm now learning a lot about it. So what I know about and what I actually invest in is residential. So I mostly do single family and small multifamily real estate. But there is commercial real estate, and commercial real estate covers a wide variety. This can be the mall you go to can be owned by someone, and every store in that mall is paying rent to the owner of the building. You can get into, you know, any type of warehouse, that can be considered commercial. You can be into land, so you can have land. If there's farmers on that land and they're, you know, growing crops, then they can be paying you for that land, rent on that land. You can get into multifamily, and this is multifamily apartments, you know, anywhere from really starting from like more than five up to hundreds of units. Hotels is a form of commercial real estate as well. And I'm sure everyone has stayed in a hotel. So that's another way you can get into real estate, and even down to office buildings. Office buildings, you know, if you have a office building that has multiple different companies working in there and they're all leasing for, you know, however long period of time, you can charge them as well. So the diversification for real estate from that aspect is really good. But also not just the different types of real estate, but you can also diversify by different markets. So if you invest locally where you live, you can diversify by investing in other areas. So if you are someone that lives in California, knowing how expensive you know, California is, let's say you're living in San Francisco, the numbers really don't make sense a lot of times for you to, you know, mortgage a property and then trying to get tenants because the rent really can't cover your mortgage a lot of the time, just because it's just so expensive. So I see a lot of people that live in California rent and get into real estate in a lot of different areas, you know, like Texas, Tennessee, Florida, all those different areas where the numbers make sense. So diversification goes through the different types of real estate, but it also can affect the different markets that you want to get into real estate as well. Number nine is going to be one that I think most people actually don't really understand how this works. And this is going to be the refinance. So if we're going to, I'm going to go back to the $100,000 example I was using before. If you bought that house for $100,000 and over time you with principal pay down and appreciation, natural appreciation, the value of that house doubles and it goes up to $200,000. Now your net worth just increased by $100,000, but that is considered trapped and debt equity, meaning that equity is in that house, but you really cannot get that equity out until you sell it, because when you sell it, then you can reclaim, you know, the equity that's in the house. There is one other way to get the equity out, and that is by doing a cash out refinance. So this is where you're going to go back to the bank and you're going to say, hey, I know, you know, I bought this house for $100,000. You probably paid down the mortgage over time. And let's say maybe you owe $80,000. The property value went up to $200,000. And now you're like, hey, I have $120,000 of equity in the house, and I would like to get some of that money out. So now you can go through the process of getting a new loan. So the bank will issue you a new loan. They're going to pay off that $80,000 balance, and then they're going to give you the other $120,000. And you can take that money now and you can go and invest in more real estate. And instead of just buying one house, you could take that $120,000 out and you can invest in multiple other properties. So refinance is really a good tool that you can use to help yourself really branch out and expand your portfolio. Last but not least, favorite reason I enjoy real estate over other types of investment is because it's a tangible asset. It's real. It's something you can go, you can touch, you can feel it. It's not a paper asset. And when I say a paper asset is a stock where you can go on your computer, you know, make a trade and the trade is going to be executed, but you never really feel, touch anything. It's just numbers on a screen that's moving. I own multiple different properties in multiple different states. And at any point in time, I can go to those properties. I can look at it. I can touch it. I can feel it. It's real and I own it. So if anything happens, I know that I have a tangible asset and doesn't go through the fluctuation of the market on a day-to-day. Yes, real estate does fluctuate. However, like I said, with it being tangible, if all else fails, you know, and property values begin to drop and I have renters in my units, more than likely rent does not drop as much as property values do. So I know I have someone in there and they're going to continue to pay the same rent. And like I said, it's a tangible asset. I know I can go touch it. I own it. And it's not just something that I just monitor in a screen and I log in every day. And, you know, whatever happens in China is going to affect my real estate portfolio. So those are all the reasons that I really, really enjoy real estate over any other asset class. And hopefully you guys can learned something new today as far as how to, you know, maximize your real estate investing or why real estate is really one of the best investments out there. There's many other reasons why I enjoy real estate, but like I said, for time's sake, I didn't really get into all that. So if you want to hear the other reasons I enjoy real estate, go ahead and send me a message, leave a comment, and I can address whatever questions you guys have. That's going to do it for today. Please go ahead and leave me a rating and let me know what you liked, didn't like about this episode. And if you like more of this content, I'll go ahead and continue to make more as far as, you know, real estate and stuff. So hope you all have a good week. And I will see you in the next episode.